You're listening to Technology Matters, a show for the casual computer and gadget user that airs the second Saturday of every month. It's hosted by Gateway IT instructor Christine Lazaro.
Good morning, everyone. So today I want to start out with a topic that was triggered by a brief news report that I saw on one of the local channels about digital ownership of content. Apparently the courts are going to start debating who owns digital content, the music, the books that you might download on your Kindle or your Nook or your MP3 player or iTunes or whatever it is. So I wanted to start out with that topic. I don't know how long, because I have actually quite a bit of information that I gathered as I was researching the topic. And so depending on how much time is left after I'm done, I might talk about a couple of other things. It was interesting, as I started researching this, one of the other things that came up was, you know, my goal as I was researching was to look at it from a perspective of content, music, books, you know, games, etc. But one of the first things that popped up when I was looking at this was actually devices. We don't necessarily think about these kinds of things, you know, but in the day of digital and everything else, we do have to factor in devices. And it was kind of interesting what came up. So here's just a couple of little blurbs, food for thought, you know, nothing, you know, no major profound, you know, statements, but here's a couple of things that came up. So the first one was with regard to Samsung and the Galaxy Note 7. This was the smartphone that had the battery issues, and obviously once the batteries were found to explode, Samsung quickly recalled those Galaxy Note 7s and gave everybody a refund, but there were still some that were out there that hadn't been returned. So Samsung basically disabled all of those other devices that were left out there. And, you know, the fact that a phone company or not so much a cell phone provider, but an actual company can go and remotely disable a device, you know, kind of makes you wonder. HP, they used a firmware update to prevent users of their printers from using aftermarket ink cartridges. They since reversed it, or at least they allowed people who didn't like that update to go and apply a different one that would disable that disabling. Say that, you know, 10 times fast, right? But it, you know, it does make you wonder. Now, manufacturers of printers have typically, you know, number one in the warranty, all of the warranties state that if you use aftermarket cartridges, it voids the warranty. And there is some risk because sometimes those aftermarket cartridges can do some damage to printers. But it was interesting that they were able to do that. Apple uses firmware consistently to try to prevent their users from jailbreaking their phones. Jailbreaking allows users to be able to go and download whatever they want. And obviously, device manufacturers have, you know, used those devices to do data collection. So there's always been privacy concerns. But it does make you, you know, question, you know, who owns the device and what if the device manufacturers are maintaining that you're really just kind of renting the device and that they still own it and can do whatever they want. It does make you, you know, start to, you know, question these kinds of things, especially with regard to privacy. And, you know, yes, if enough people discover things and start complaining, then the manufacturers will kind of reverse themselves or say, you know, we're not collecting anything that's tied to you, you know, we're just using it for market research and it's anonymous. And You know, Samsung with their smart TVs have some issues. And it does, you know, it does beg the question of, you know, how private is our lives these days with the world of, you know, digital devices and everything else. So, again, just food for thought. Like I said, you know, no real profound statements on devices, but if a phone manufacturer can reach out and disable your device because they don't like what you're doing or, you know, whatever it might be, makes you kind of wonder. So let's get on to the real meat of it, you know, with regard to this, and that's more on digital content. So these days we don't go to the store anymore and buy, you know, yes, we sometimes still buy CDs and albums and books. Otherwise, you know, stores like Barnes & Noble would be, you know, out of business. But I would venture to guess that the majority of our content these days comes in a digital form, especially music. It's just so easy, you know, to go to Amazon and download, you know, specific songs. You know, this was a big complaint that people had in the, you know, back in the days of, you know, Napster and all of that, that if I bought an album for, you know, $19.99, there might be one or two good songs on there and the rest I wasn't really particularly interested in. So that's what's kind of nice about digital music downloads is I can pick the exact songs that I want, or if I want the whole album, I can buy the whole album and I don't have to, you know, use gas or anything else. It's, you know, boom, in an instant, it's there. Now, software, you know, that's kind of a different thing. And yeah, we don't go and buy software anymore. I remember when you'd go into your local Best Buy and there would be racks and racks of, you know, boxes of software, and we'd buy them and bring them home and take the, you know, disk out and install it on our, you know, computers. But we don't do that anymore. Now we download them again from Amazon or Steam or wherever it might be. And software has always, pretty much all software has always had the rule or, you know, the standard, or it's just accepted that when you buy software, you don't own the actual software. If you read the pages and pages of end user license agreement, it states in there, you do not own this software. You are just simply getting a license, license to use it as long as you'd like. But you can't go in and look at the source code unless it's open source. You know, that's a different thing. But when you buy private software, you don't own it. You've just simply got a license to use it. So now, are we going to extend that same standard to digital content like books and music? And if we are, what does that really mean when you buy music? Is it licensed or is it owned? And what's the difference? And then we also want to make the distinction between buying and renting. For example, you know, when you rent a book, you know, from, you know, like especially textbooks, you know, deal with that all the time. You know, students might rent a book for the duration of the semester, and then once the rental period is over, the book disappears. You don't own it anymore. But there are, you know, outside of the venue of textbooks, Amazon has the Kindle Lending Library where you can essentially check out a book, you know, just kind of the same as you go to your local library and check out a hard book, you know, a real book. You have to return it to the library. Same thing with a lending library. So we're not talking about that type of thing, or even music sources, you know, like Spotify. You know, Spotify, you pay a monthly fee, and yes, you can download music for offline listening, but once your Spotify, you cancel your Spotify account, you don't have access to that music anymore. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, that's a different ball of wax. You know, obviously, you wouldn't expect to own it, but we do go and buy books and music from sources like Amazon or iTunes or wherever it might be. And then it does, you know, that's where we, you know, we want to ask the question, do we really own that particular content? And if we own it, what does that mean? What can I do with it? Can I turn around and sell it? Can I, you know, give it to a friend? Can I, if I die, can I will it to, you know, my heirs? And there's been some, you know, issues out there that, you know, kind of beg that question of, you know, no, you don't really own it. For example, books, you know, you buy a book from Amazon, download it on your Kindle or Barnes and Noble. What can you do with it? Can you give it away? You know, like you might with a book when you're done reading it. Amazon had deleted books from Kindles when there was a question of copyright abuse. It was interesting because it happened to be George Orwell's Animal Farm in 1984, which kind of talked about these sorts of things. They did wind up giving the purchasers a refund or a credit for that. But if you buy something, you know, from iTunes or whatnot, can iTunes turn around then and delete that music if they feel you're giving it away? There's interesting debates about this. And if you think about it, there was a very, very interesting court case. It was a company called Redigi. So when we still had CDs and albums, you would have businesses that would buy your used CDs or, you know, your CDs or your DVDs. You were tired of the music. You didn't want it anymore. So you would take it down to Disco Round or Music Around or whatever it might be. And they would buy it from you. And then somebody else could, you know, turn around and buy that from them. And that was perfectly legal. The courts had a doctrine called first use. So when you owned something, you could turn around and sell it. So Redigi wanted to use that same concept basically with digital music. And the way that the service worked, you would sell your digital music to them. They would wipe it from your computer and then they would put it on their server and somebody else would come along and buy it. Well, Capitol Records wound up suing them and the court actually ruled for Capitol Records. They said that the doctrine of first use did not apply here because it was different, that unlike a physical CD or a physical album, there's only one copy. Digital content can be essentially reused indefinitely because we can make copies of it. And then the copies are not the same as the original. And yes, you know, clearly that is illegal because you can't turn around and copy copyrighted information and sell it. You know, yeah, we could make copies of our physical CDs. But again, if we sold those, we were in violation of the law, which also always made me wonder about, you know, the whole legality of selling even a physical CD. I could take my physical CD and, you know, put it on my computer. I could, you know, download it to my computer and then take that physical CD and sell it. I still had the music, right? I just didn't have a physical CD anymore. So then I could burn a CD off of that and put it in my car. So in a sense, I was kind of selling something that I hadn't really gotten rid of, right? But I can understand, or I can see, I'm not sure I agree with it, but I can see how the court could say that with Redigi, because there isn't a physical thing that can only really be sold once and only exist in one place, digital content can conceivably exist in multiple places. So I can see that. Now, it was interesting because, the courts did decide in favor of Capitol Records, and Redigi was going to appeal that, and they asked the courts to put a temporary injunction while they appealed it, but the courts, it was going to a jury trial, and the court said, no, you can appeal after the jury case is decided. Since then, Redigi settled with Capitol Records out of court, but they still have appealed it. In late last year, they filed an appeal. Even though they settled the case, they wanted to appeal the whether or not, in fact, that whole thing was illegal. The appeal hasn't been decided yet, but again, you know, I think that there will be case law that will, you know, that will ultimately define whether or not the doctrine of first use does apply to digital content. But as it stands right now, you cannot resell digital content. So if you download any, you can't legally resell. So if you download from iTunes or Amazon Music or software, if you download something from Steam, you cannot legally resell it. And I think that the vendors of this, the manufacturers of this, like the Capitol Records, like the game manufacturers, will come back and say that there is no way to prove that you did in fact delete it completely from your computer and no longer have it. Still, I think that, you know, it's still a gray area because, again, if it was okay for me to, you know, resell physical CDs or physical DVDs, they couldn't prove that I hadn't made a digital copy, and so I still own it. But I guess the doctrine of first use is applying only to that physical CD, physical DVD, and not the digital copy. So we're just selling our physicalness. I'm selling my physical book. I'm selling my physical CD. I'm selling my physical DVD. I'm not reselling my digital content. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens when the once the appeal has been settled, and then it'll be interesting to see what happens if that becomes case law and does apply in those kinds of situations. So just keep an eye out for that. So that then begged another question, or led to another point, and this is something that I've actually been kind of talking about, discussing, looking into, and that's the area of Kodi. And I had mentioned this on another show before. Kodi, K-O-D-I, is an application that you can install. It's big on the Fire Sticks and the Fire TVs, but you can actually install Kodi on anything. You can install it on a computer. You can install it on your phone. You can anything, you know, basically you can install Kodi. So there's two different things going on here with Kodi. Kodi came from a company. It's an open source piece of software, and basically it is a media streamer. So you put it on a computer, and then you can stream media to your different devices, whether it's music, TV, or whatnot, that you own. Okay, so you put your content on a network shared drive, and then you can use Kodi to access this. So I want to clarify here right now that in and of itself, the application Kodi, using Kodi, installing it on a computer or anything else, is not typically considered illegal. Okay, in and of itself, you cannot really do anything illegal with Kodi. And if you use Kodi to access other streaming services, it is not considered illegal as long as you have a paid subscription. So it's kind of the same thing as buying a Roku or a Fire Stick and then using it to access your Netflix or your Hulu that you currently subscribe to. You put in your user ID and your password, and you can use that device. It's, being able to incorporate all of that all in one. But typically, users that download and install Kodi, they go on to install one of the various different add-ons that are out there and available. Big one is Exodus. And this is where the legality or illegality starts coming into play, because with Exodus, you can stream content from all kinds of sources that may or may not be copyrighted and may be pirated. And so that's where, the issue really comes into play, is when you use one of those add-ons. And this is also an interesting thing, because then it starts begging the question, is streaming copyrighted content illegal? I'm not downloading it. I'm not saving it. Obviously, downloading copyrighted content is illegal. No questions. Courts have ruled on that, over and over and over. This is where, Napster and people that use Napster and Kazaa and BitTorrents, this is where they get into trouble. But others have, used the argument, I'm not downloading, I'm only streaming. And so how can that be illegal? And it's interesting, because in the European Union, there have been a couple of cases and there have been a couple of courts in the European Union that have declared that watching streamlined content is not illegal, that the only ones breaking the law are the streamers, because they're the ones that downloaded the pirated content. However, streaming content can be illegal if you knowingly stream copyrighted content. So if you know that it's copyrighted and it's been pirated and you stream it, then you are breaking the law. But if you don't know that it's pirated and you stream it, then you're not breaking the law. How do you make that distinction, But I ask the question, when you can go online all day to different network sites like CBS and ABC, etc., and you can watch their shows over the internet. So how is that different when you're using an app like Exodus? I mean, where is that distinction, or where's that fine line? Is it because when you go to sites like ABC, they still interrupt you with commercials, but if you are streaming from an app like Exodus, there are no commercials, and thus the producers of that content aren't getting any revenue from there? And I'm not a lawyer, and I'm certainly not saying, go ahead and use Exodus, it's perfectly fine. I'm not advocating that at all. I'm just raising questions here, and and I am saying that yes, if you use Exodus and you are watching copyrighted content, like a first-run movie that's still out in the theaters, that's clearly illegal, and doing everything else can potentially be illegal. Another concern, and this is a big thing, I don't make statements against illegality or legality of things. I tell you, this is illegal. When people were using, back in the day when people were using Kazaa and or when they use BitTorrents, I talk to my students about the, not only the, and their IT students, we talk not only about the whole ethics of it, but I also raise the issue, if they were a producer of content and somebody was going around, downloading there for free, wouldn't they feel really awful because they weren't making any money? So I do not advocate the illegal downloading of content. I'm just saying that there are questions here with regard to all of this, and maybe the companies need to do a new paradigm. I will say that I would expect that there's going to be some clear-cut law one of these days defining the legality of streaming as opposed to downloading. Downloading is clearly downloading. Copyrighted content is clearly illegal unless you pay for it. But what about the streaming? And I think we're going to see some clear-cut law on that and expect it to come fairly soon because, this is becoming a very, very big thing as, again, Kodi and the Fire Stick and Exodus and all that gain in popularity. The companies that produce this content are going to say, hey, we're losing money. Something has to be done. And with the current political atmosphere being more pro-business, I would expect this to be, to become a bona fide case law. There will be clear-cut law on this, and there won't be any of this gray area anymore that we can say, but I'm just streaming, I'm not downloading. If any of my students are listening to this, some of them are going to beat up on me on Tuesday, but just keep all of this in mind. But beside that whole issue of whether or not the streaming is legal or not illegal and arguing the point, there is another big concern. So I don't care what you're doing with your Fire Stick and your Kodi and your Exodus. Do understand that there are some real security issues out there. Kodi is extremely vulnerable. And once you start going out online and you start going to these other servers to stream that content, you are susceptible to hacking and all kinds of other aspects. So if you are going to use Kodi in this manner and reach out and go out onto the internet, so even if you're using it legally in all its ways, it is strongly suggested that you use a VPN or virtual private network to protect yourself from those security issues. And if you can just Google Kodi VPN and you'll get, dozens of sites with dozens of recommendations. And the VPN providers will typically charge a very small nominal fee. And basically what that does, and instead of going directly to your internet service provider and then the content coming directly back to you, the VPN allows that content to be more protected, uses a private tunnel through the internet, if you will, to where the people on the other end can't come back into your network. And if you don't use the VPN, they could conceivably come back into your network, hack into your network, scan your computer, and gather any private content that might be on your computer, including credit card numbers, financial information, whatever it is. So regardless of how you're using Kodi, make sure you are using a VPN with Kodi. Even if you're using it perfectly legally, still, it is a strong recommendation that you use a VPN. So there you go, folks. Digital content, digital devices, legal, not legal. Oh, my goodness. It makes us all want to just disconnect from everything and go back to using pen and paper and buying our CDs and DVDs from Best Buy, right? Everybody have a good weekend, and hope I didn't scare you too much, but this is something that we have to accept in the day of digitalness, right? Take care, all. We'll talk to you next month.
You've been listening to Technology Matters with hosts Christine Lazzaro.
That Darn Plot, a humorous and heartfelt comedy, is on stage at the Racine Theater Guild weekends through March 12th. Matinee performances and group discounts are available. For more, visit racinetheater.org.